Oh, that was loud. Got everybody's attention. Good afternoon. All right. Welcome to the October 18th regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission. Will now come to order. All right, well, I'd like to pause for a moment for our invocation and then we'll proceed into the Pledge of Allegiance. And if you guys would stand, please. Mr. Noah, do you want to do it for us?
Please.
Yeah, please.
Father, we ask you to be with us during the proceedings. Better than this community and all of the time that is on the earth.
I have pledge allegiance to the flag.
Which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, just for information purposes, the petitioners and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices and proclamations, notice proclamations and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with staff recommendation and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on the regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will be followed by a presentation by the petitioner, should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open to the public for comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a speaker card and give to staff. If you are participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on the control panel on your screen and we will acknowledge you. And at that time, please make sure you unmute yourselves and submit your comment. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized, staff will unmute you and or you unmute yourself. And at that time, end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you want to speak, still use the raise your hand feature, or if you are in person, fill out a speaker card. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then additional needed comments or needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. Okay. So again, the first item on the agenda now, well, the next item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve?
Cole's motion to approve.
Noah's second.
All right, motion is made by Mr. Cole and second by Mr. Noah. We'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you. Motion is approved and the agenda is approved. Now we'll move on to notices and proclamations. There is one notice and that is at today's meeting, October the 18th, 2022, swearing in of the MPC officers by Judge Benjamin W. Karp, the Chatham County Superior Court. At 1:30 p.m. at the MPC Arthur Mendoza Hearing Room at 112 East State Street. Judge Karp.
Thank you all for having me here. I'm glad to be here to be able to do this for you folks. When I mentioned to my father that I was coming here to do this, he reminded me, or maybe he told me this for the first time, but he was on this commission, it's got to be more than 40 years ago now. And he said that the commission used to meet in the Gamble building on Bay Street, and they used to have lunch catered by the Exchange every day. And so I hope they're treating y'all at least as well as that. But seriously, what this commission does and considers is so important, and it can have a profound effect on the fabric of our community. And so if you as the officers and the rest of the board commissioners keep that in mind as you go about your duties, I have no doubt that we're all going to be in very good hands with your decisions. And so with that, I will swear in the officers, and I'm swearing in the chair, the vice chair, the secretary, and the treasurer, who have all risen from their chairs, and I'll ask you to each raise your right hand. I'm going to swear you in together. I'm going to read the oath. I'm not going to have you repeat after me, because that always gets awkward. So it's easier for me to read the whole thing, and then when I'm done, if you will state I do, then you will be sworn in. And so with that, I will ask them, does each of you solemnly swear that you hold no position of public trust or private interest which places you in a position of conflict of purpose with the Charter of the Metropolitan Planning Commission, and that in accordance with the constitutions of the United States and the state of Georgia, the laws of this state, and all applicable local ordinances, you will faithfully discharge your duties as officers of said commission, deciding each matter that shall come before the commission on its merits alone, without fear or favor with regard to any affected parties or agencies? All right. Thank you very much, folks. That concludes the oath. You are sworn in. And, you know, the deal is, if I come here and swear you all in, every decision you all make is going to be so pleasing to the public that it's never going to show up in Superior Court. So I thank you in advance for that, and I wish you all the best.
And can we have, like, you guys just come around and do a quick photo op with you and the judge? And if you've had your partner, spouses, whatever, do you want to come and do a photo with them, that's fine. So we have it for the newsletter.
You tell me where you are.
Exactly where you are. I'll get you at an angle. Okay, so first,
Judge Carp, we appreciate your time for coming to swear us in, and we'll do the best we can to make you proud.
Good luck, y'all. Thank you.
All right, thanks. All right, so we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, and that is items to requested to be removed from the final agenda. I will read those items for the record. Number two, map amendment, Wild Heron Road, rezoned from A1 to RMF1. And RSF4, and that's petition number 22-002692-ZA. Next item, it's master plan amendment 1901 Benton Boulevard. That's petition number 22-003026. Next item is the map amendment at 362 Fort Argyle Road. rezoned from A1 to IL. That's petition number 22-003510. Next item is a map amendment at 12500 Apache Avenue, a rezone from RSF-E to B-M. And that's petition number 22-004424-ZA. And then we have number six, special use permit at 12500 Apache Avenue, request for an accessory alcohol sale by a drink within a marina restaurant. Petition number 22-004426-ZA. And then rezoning map amendment at 1800 East 63rd Street, rezone from RSF6 to RMF-2-20. And that is petition number 22004421. Is there a motion to remove the items as requested?
So moved, Coles.
No, it's second.
All right, motion is on the floor by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Noah to remove the items. We'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you. Oh yeah, is there anyone that was here in on for one of those items? Okay, thank you. Hearing none, we'll continue on to the next item on the agenda. We'll move on to the items requested to be withdrawn. There are none. And now we'll move on to the consent agenda. That item is to authorize the executive director to execute and file FY 2024 FTA Transit Planning Grant, section 5303.
Coles make motion to approve the consent agenda.
Noah, second.
All right, motion on the floor by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Noah to approve. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you. I'm going to assume that nobody in the audience was here for that item. And if you were, as you hear, that item was approved and you can stay or go at your discretion. All right, we'll move on to old business. There's none listed. Now we're moving to the regular business. The first item on that agenda is a text amendment, the expansion of a permitted districts for small restaurants, and that petition number is 22-003650-ZA. Mr. Gandhi.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nirav Gandhi, MPC staff. So we have a text amendment proposal here for you. Essentially, we received a request a few months ago for a property owner who was in an OI district near a university to operate a small cafe in an office, an institutional district. She was not able to, and all three of the office institutional districts, OI, OIE, and OIT, do not currently permit restaurants of any kind. They do have other similar uses, such as small retail and food counter sales. So we do feel that like a small restaurant use does fit in with the intended use of that district. The OI uses are typically intended to be transitional between residential and commercial areas. And so again, a restaurant with some restrictions that we've proposed here, we feel would be a good fit for use and, you know, friendly to business owners as well in these areas. We also typically have a lot of hospitals and universities in these areas, and having more restaurants in those areas is probably beneficial to both parties, the business owners and the employees there. So essentially what we've done is put together these four restrictions that would be attached to any restaurants that are opened in these districts. These are just, again, for OI, OIE, and OIT. The restaurant restrictions for other districts are remaining unchanged from this. So number one, within the identified districts, restaurants shall be allowed within existing buildings only. Required parking shall be 5 spaces per 1,000 square feet for restaurants over 3,000 square feet in gross floor area. Drive-through restaurants shall be prohibited, and hours of operation shall be limited from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Again, a lot of these office institutional districts are on the border with residential areas. There's a lot of these have homes right next to them. So that is, you know, our reason for limiting the hours of operation as well. As asked by Mr. Noah, I did put together a little map of some of the larger uses of OI. So everything marked in red here is an OI use. The things I haven't labeled here are all either churches or single family homes. But even some of the larger churches are labeled here. As you can see, the larger buildings in these districts are pretty much all institutions of some kind, whether they be worship institutions or schools or medical institutions. If that is the case, we do feel that these kinds of areas can support a restaurant as well. There would be shared parking typical of these kinds of places as well, even if someone were to open a larger restaurant here, such as in a hospital. So yeah, with that, I'd answer any questions from the commissioners.
Thank you, Mr. Gandhi. Any questions for staff?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Melder.
Thank you. We have recommended and approved several transition zoning. And I was just wondering, over the last year or two, have we gone back to discover if any of those discussions included an assurance that there would not be a restaurant in those transitional spaces? Oftentimes we use what is not permitted as a way to make sure that people are comfortable with the zoning that we're approving. So wondering if we've done any due diligence in looking back at those transitional zoning applications that we've approved.
I have not done that investigation personally. I don't know if Marcus wants to speak to that.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Melder. You were involved in some of those decisions previously over the last year or so about rezoning some properties to transitional districts. We did take a look at the ones that were previously approved. I don't believe that there was discussion in those items that was specific to prohibiting restaurants as uses. Most of the ones that we dealt with were either some type of retail or some type of office use. But we did not ever specifically exclude restaurants as a potential use on those properties. When we looked at the sites, primarily, and this was the important part I thought, is that most of the sites that Mr. Gandhi identified, even on this map, are on primarily on arterial streets. So we felt like that could accommodate that type of use. So that was really a large part of the thinking, but I don't think we ever were specifically prohibiting restaurants in those transitional areas.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any further questions for staff? Okay. Is there any member of the public that wishes to speak on this? Because I believe we are the petitioners. So, all right.
How do we notify folks that this text change was coming about?
When we do text amendments, we pretty much just put up the legal ad because it is a wide casting net that is going to affect the entire city and probably the whole county, to be frank. So we're not really able to mail everybody who is going to be affected by that decision.
And do we have sidewalks on Montgomery Cross?
Great. Are there on
one?
Okay, is there OIE on the side that doesn't have sidewalks? Or OI?
I want to say there is some OI on that north end that doesn't have the sidewalks. There's like four or five maybe parcels along the way.
There are, I travel that road a good bit, and there are some OI zoned properties on one side of the street currently that do not have sidewalks, because there's only sidewalk for the most part on one side of the street. There are portions that only have it on one side of the street.
Is that a concern?
But that zoning exists now, and we're not proposing a change in the zoning.
But you're proposing to add restaurants that are walkable community restaurants.
Right, which could also be office uses or other uses permitted under the OI zoning now.
All right.
Ms. Jarrett, if I may, one of the things that I will get with the city manager about is, because this is the first kind of big text amendment that we've had that impacts multiple areas, having them put this text amendment on their website as well as on their station so that more people know that this change is being proposed. Before they have their hearing.
City Council hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Anything further? Okay, we can go ahead. Mr. Coles.
Travis Coles, I still think that we need to make a recommendation to limit alcohol because of how broad the OI is in the city, especially because we have built it as the transition from more intrusive or more intensive to residential areas. I think it would be wise for us to pass that recommendation along, because if anyone wants to have alcohol when they now have a right to have a restaurant, then they have to come back and either request a rezone, which would actually notify the people who are immediately adjacent to the property. I just think that that would be a good recommendation to have with this particular petition.
We could certainly add as a condition.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, along those lines of question, would a restaurant have to come get a special use permit to serve alcohol already as part of the ordinance here?
Right now, the language doesn't require that. So a restaurant, if it's a permitted use within a district, could come and request an alcohol license of the city of Savannah without going through the special use permit process, just going through the request for alcohol license.
The other option too that you also have is you could have this addition of a new use, because I understand that there have been a lot of questions about it, be either a conditional use or a special use that comes back for approval, so that the neighborhood knows what's going on versus this new use that's popping up, and that continues to help this process be transparent. So you have a right to add that as well.
I think that's a great point. And let me just add this, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to inundate the board with options, but as we kind of talk this out in this hearing, I think it's important is that what we're proposing now just is that this use be permitted in the district. Then the discussion about alcohol came up, which I think is a valid discussion based on the fact that this is usually in a transitional area. One thing that this board could recommend is that the use be permitted, and should the use come with a request for alcohol, then it becomes a special use request, which would then have to go through the special use permit process first and go through city council. And should they get the special use permit approved, then they could request an alcohol license. That would be an option for the board to consider to address the alcohol issue.
Mr. Chairman, I would say that I think I agree with that approach, Mr. Lawson. And just for the knowledge of folks listening in, a special use request would require notification to.
Exactly. Right. That would be a public hearing process, both here at the MPC as well as at City Council. That would be a notification process to adjoining property owners. So it would go through that process before it could be a step, before the use could be established.
So just for clarification, since we're here doing the minutes, so are you saying that if someone wants to convert or come in to add a restaurant use to this area, that they would have to get a special use permit to do the restaurant, or a conditional use permit to do the restaurant itself?
I think,
or the restaurant only if they have alcohol? Because my comment was based on the fact that you can have a restaurant that still generates a lot of traffic, and if they're not parking requirements and some other stuff that are going to be not included in this, we need to have, there needs to be some way that the public knows and that you all have a chance to look at it, even if it's something that comes back to the MPC to do a review on. So that's why I made my recommendation with regards to, just because of this use, it's different. That it just get a special use permit.
Can I make a motion?
And it appears, I'm sorry.
That's already set in the ordinance.
I would like.
Actually, hold on, Ms. Jackson. We actually have somebody on, a member of the public.
Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Marvin Vickery, if you would, please unmute yourself and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. Mr. Vickery, you have the floor. We're seeing you have the green light on this end, Mr. Vickery. Okay. I'm not sure if there's technical difficulties on his end or not, but I think we'll go ahead and proceed. Ms. Jarrett, excuse me.
I'd like to move that we allow restaurants in the OI, the OIE, the OIT districts as a special use with the other conditions that were included by staff.
Do I have a second?
Second, Bowles.
All right. Any discussion on the motion?
Yes.
Just a question of Mr. Coles.
For clarity, so that would be a special to allow restaurants, but for they had to obtain a special use permit for it, which would also trigger with alcohol, right?
Alcohol will require a special use permit anyway, we've learned. So I think Ms. Jarrett's motion is any restaurant will require a special use permit, correct?
And then subsequently alcohol.
Right.
Okay. Is everybody comfortable with the motion that's on the floor? All right. Okay, we'll enter into a vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Epstein?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. All right, thank you. The motion passes and the text amendment is approved with conditions. All right, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. That is the text amendment, section 7.8, 7.9, 7.10, 7.11, and 13.5. Historic District's True Stucco Clarification, and this is petition number 22-004185-ZA, and this is a staff initiated. Ms. Mahalik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Leah Mahalik with the Historic Preservation Department. So this is initiated, it says staff initiated because I mean, we filled out the application, but this is initiated by the Savannah Historic Preservation Commission and the Downtown Historic District Board of Review. And the issue consists of text amendments to the ordinance to revise the definition of stucco and to add a definition of true stucco and also to clarify true stucco within the four historic district overlays. I'm going to give you a little bit of background that I didn't go through in the pre-meeting so you all can have some more information. So the HDBR, which is the Historic District Board of Review, and the HPC, during the course of typical certificate of appropriateness review processes, that discovered that the definition of true stucco wasn't adequately defined in Section 13.5 defined terms. And that's the part you're seeing up here. There's a section under defined terms for historic defined terms within the ordinance. Additionally, they found that, I'm using this page as an example, they found that it wasn't, they found that it is only appropriate for buildings to have true stucco as defined by the proposed definition within the local historic districts. And therefore, they're proposing to adjust the language throughout Section 7.8, which applies only to downtown. 7.9 is Victorian. 710 is the Kyler Brownville District, and 711 is the Streetcar District. After drafting the proposed text amendments at the request of the HDBR and the HPC, MPC staff presented the proposed text amendments during two public HPC meetings as well as an HDBR meeting. Additionally, MPC staff invited neighborhood association presidents and liaisons via email for all four of the local historic districts to a virtual meeting to discuss and for us to accept comments regarding this amendment. The DNA liaison and the Kyler Brownville president attended the meeting and provided comment, and we incorporated those comments in the proposed amendment, and that's when we then presented it back to HPC one more time. So it's been out there, it's been around for a while. I'm gonna go over a little bit of why this is important. So the International Building Code has introduced climate zones, and Savannah is in climate zone 2, which is considered moist, in case you hadn't noticed. non-traditional or non-conventional stucco, such as a single coat of plaster or stucco over wood frame walls, or traditional over wood, stucco over wood sheathing. In this environment, they crack quickly and easily because the wood swells. Stucco applied directly on masonry without a vapor barrier, to be specific, such as concrete block, acts as a moisture barrier and a moisture management system. The ordinances in 7.8.10, 7.9.10, 7.10.10, and 7.11.10 state that, I might have written down the wrong page. No, here it is. Okay. State that though certain building materials are prescribed herein, the board may approve alternative materials that are not listed as prohibited upon a showing by the applicant that the material or product is visually compatible with historic building materials and has performed satisfactorily in the local climate. The board has found that products that are not true stucco do not perform satisfactorily in the local climate. And once they've weathered, they crack and mold, they're no longer visually compatible. So that's another reason for this change. All right, so all that being said, with regard to policy analysis, the proposed text amendments are consistent with the intent of the ordinance, which is to construct new buildings that are appropriate within the historic districts and to protect the integrity of the contributing resources within the district. These amendments will also help ensure the long-term success of the historic overlay standards and the buildings constructed using these standards. I want to make one more point, just because it came up in the pre-meeting, and that none of these changes apply to the standards for historic buildings. These are all standards that apply to new construction within the district, so it will have no impact on any historic buildings. Staff is recommending approval for the text amendment to the ordinance to revise the definitions of stucco and true stucco and clarify true stucco within the four historic district overlays. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Leah. Any questions for staff? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a member of the public that would like to speak on this? Nobody online? Okay. Hearing none, we'll go ahead and entertain the vote.
Call this motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Noah, second.
All right, so this motion on the floor made by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Noah to approve this petition. We'll go ahead and any discussion on the motion? All right, we'll enter into a vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Epstein?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
And Mr. Wildwood?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. Motion is passed and the text amendment is approved. All right, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. There's a special use permit for 1504 and 1506 Bull Street. Request for an accessory alcohol sale by a drink within two restaurants. It's petition number 22-004-422-ZA. Ms. Leto.
Good afternoon, Melissa Leto, MPC staff. The subject property is located within the Matadora at 1512 Bull Street. It's a mixed-use multifamily building. The building includes commercial suites located on the first floor and residential apartments located within the upper levels. The proposed restaurants are in two commercial suites facing Bull Street with addresses 1504 and 1506 Bull Street. The subject parcel is a corner lot east of Bull Street and south of East 31st Street. The two suites proposed for the two restaurants connect internally through a shared kitchen where the chef and staff will cook for each of the establishments. The parcel is located within the TC1 Traditional Commercial 1 Zoning District, the Streetcar Historic District, and the Thomas Square neighborhood. The following establishments that are there currently are Vell, a premium work cafe at 1508 Bull Street, and the Memorial Health Apple Care Urgent Care at 1512 Bull Street. The two units that are highlighted in blue are the proposed restaurants. One will be named Cast and Catch, and then the other one is unnamed at the moment, but it has a Mediterranean menu. Here's a map of the Bull Street corridor and blocks within that area from Anderson to Victory Drive to speak about the other establishments that also have alcohol sales and accessory use. Those include Bull Street Taco, Sly Sliders, Cotton and Rye, Foxy Loxy Cafe, Elizabeth on 37th, The Vault, Starlin Yard, Green Truck, Ardsley Station, Two Tides Brewing, and possibly the two restaurants located within the Matador. The Streetcar Historic District's development pattern includes many establishments that do not offer off-street parking. The Streetcar District is subject to the parking reduction in Article 9, Section 9.3.7D, whereas the property shall not be required to provide vehicle parking spaces for the first 3,000 square feet of non-residential uses. This district is also located in an area of the city that provides for walkability and on-street parking. In talking about the review criteria, I would say that whether the special use is consistent with the comprehensive plan. Currently, the future land use map is civic institutional. However, staff is in the process of revising the existing future land use map and the designations. Staff has identified this property in the future that it would become residential general, and this classification would be more appropriate for the mixed use multifamily use. The proposed operational hours would be Monday through Wednesday from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., Thursday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 1 a.m., and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. So this is the first floor plan of the building at the Matadora, indicating the trash location. It's a commercial dumpster located to the rear of the first floor and outlined in red. So this would be shared amongst the commercial suites. And then parking. There are 15 vehicle parking spaces located at the Bull Street Baptist Church, a parking lot across the street on East 31st Street. They are dedicated to the subject suites and are leased by the Matadora. The building provides parking within the first floor area for the remaining uses. Again, the streetcar district is subject to the parking reduction associated with Article 9, Section 9.37D, whereas the property shall not be required to provide vehicle parking spaces for the first 3,000 square feet of non-residential uses and does not prioritize surface parking lots. The property is also in an area that provides for walkability and on-street parking. There will be no loss, destruction, or damage to any item of historical importance. The building was constructed around 2020. Any signage and or exterior changes will require a certificate of appropriateness from the historic preservation officer. Staff's recommendation is to approve the request with conditions. One, the special use permit shall be non-transferable. Two, the operational hours would be what's suggested, Monday through Wednesday from 8 till 11 p.m., Thursday through Saturday from 8 a.m. till 1 a.m., Sunday from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. And I am here to answer any questions, as well as the applicant, Joseph Yellen.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Leto. Any questions for staff? Okay. Hearing none, we'll now hear from the petitioner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I'm Josh Gellin here today on behalf of the applicant, which is Livco Furnishings. And with us from the applicant team, we have Rami Coleman and Claudel Gratia, along with their broker, Scott Dahl. And so between the four of us, we should be able to answer any questions regarding this petition. Thank you, Ms. Leto, for the staff recommendation for approval. We are in full support of the recommendation, but based upon some of the comments from the pre-meeting, I did want to give a little background about the property. And so as you can see here, this is the COA application that actually came before this board in 2019. Some of you may have been around in 2019 when this came before you and may remember why this has a civic use classification and a bunch of backstory that went with it. But this was the plans that were actually submitted. And if we were to zoom in on our signs, the plans that were submitted actually show this space as a restaurant. In fact, this building has been built out with grease traps already for a restaurant. It's always been intended to be a restaurant space. And so now we're coming back before you today with the restaurant space that's been a few years in the making. And we're all very excited about this applicant and the concept coming in. As mentioned, it is actually two separate spaces. And part of this has to do with kind of the economy of scale and costs associated with building out a restaurant. We are taking advantage of having that shared kitchen space because to build two separate kitchens side by side would be an incredibly expensive proposition for any restaurant owner, for any small business owner. And so while these will function as two separate concepts, the kitchens will be connected. And so deliveries will come in from one point at the back. There'll be a shared walk-in cooler, and all service can come in through that way. It would also cause immense problems from an alcohol licensing standpoint if we had two establishments side by side that had separate premises. You know, one beer could not go from one side to the other without having significant DOR tax implications. So to avoid that, this is one restaurant with one kitchen, but the menu will be separate on both sides. And if you all remember from me growing up in Savannah, this is kind of how Hirano's operated when it first opened. The sushi bar was always separate from the grill side, but then they put that door in between. Even though in the back of it, there's a shared kitchen, the fronts were supposed to function separately. This is just 2022 adaptation of that similar concept. And so I do want to compliment the applicants here because they have done a lot of legwork and a lot of homework in terms of preparation for this meeting. I actually attended with them an on-site open house where they were able to invite members of the apartment above them to come down to see the concept and to voice their support. We have over 70 signatures from that meeting of residents and neighbors who all came and turned out to show their support for this applicant and for this concept. Additionally, they went and got letters of support from the surrounding property owners and from neighboring communities. And I think importantly, as often comes up in the city, they do have the support of the adjacent churches who would love to have a place to come after services to come have lunch on Sundays. And so there were over 26 letters of support that came in. I would also like to mention, because they were not in the staff report, and my apologies, it's going to take a while to scroll through all of the letters of support that they have. I did want to show you the concept plans. While not necessarily material to this conversation, I know that a lot of work and time and effort and energy went into preparing the theme and making sure that they were well prepared to open a restaurant as soon as they get the special use approval and then their alcohol permit from the city. And so there will be a seafood restaurant, and that will be in the smaller space, and that's Cask and Catch. And I will quickly go through this. Excuse me. But we do have menus available that can be circulated to the city as well. And then the adjacent space was the Mediterranean concept that is still working on a name, but these are all the design inspirations and what the future build out will look like. And my apologies for having something caught in my throat here. But as you can see in the bottom right corner here, this is the proposed build out of the site. Will be a small seafood bar along with some banquettes. The kitchen, there will be a door built in over here. My apologies, I'm going to have to cut this short based upon my coughing. This is for the adjacent restaurant. That will be the Mediterranean-inspired restaurant. Name to be determined. They were doing a thank you. Not sure it's going to help, but we will see. Thank you. They were hosting a name this restaurant contest during the open house. I don't believe a final name has been established, but we will certainly bring that to the city once it's there. But once again, a full menu, which is in connection with their hours of operation, of having a full menu for full service at all times, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then brunch on the weekends. And so we are happy to answer any questions that you may have. And my apologies for the cost.
Thank you, Mr. Bates. Any questions for the petition? Ms. Jaron.
I have a question, but it's not on the petition. It's on the picture that you showed of the restaurant.
Yes, ma'am.
There was one tree shown in that picture. And the trimming that's been done on the trees that are on the street there have me concerned that we'll end up with one tree in front of that building.
Was that from this photo?
No, the other one, other view. Maybe that was a photo. It's just, yeah, make it smaller. There you go. See, there's one tree down there at the end. And I remember when we approved the development, there were assurances that all the trees would be protected. And they have been chopped pretty badly. I took pictures of it because of the extent of the chopping. It's disconcerting to me.
No, and this is news to me. I was not the attorney for the applicant. Was simply at the hearing when it was approved.
Just wanted to share.
No,
thank you.
Thank you. And I do believe as part of our request and as Ms. Little mentioned in the application, any future improvements obviously will be coming back before the HPC for approval. I know that there are some cosmetic enhancements that we are looking to make. I'm not sure if street vegetation was one of them, but part of it was to make this site a little more welcoming than it currently is, partially because of the lack of trees that are there. So, okay, let me see what we can do about that, but that is news to me about the condition.
Thank you. Any further questions for the petitioner? All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Yellen. Are there any members of the public that wish to speak on this petition? None online. Okay. All right. Well, at this time, we'll entertain a motion.
Coles make motion to recommend approval as per the staff's recommendation.
No, one second.
All right, so motion on the floor by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Noah to approve as per staff recommendations. Any discussion on the motion? All right, hearing none, we'll enter a vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
And Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. So the motion passes and petition is approved. All right, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. There's a rezoning map, south end of Cottonville Road, rezoned from RA to a PUD. Mr. Lotson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The item before you at this time is a request of rezone property on Cottonville Road. The petitioner is proposing to rezone two parcels, which include a total of approximately 237 acres from the residential agriculture classification to the plan unit development classification. This is a vicinity map highlighting the subject property. This is Ogeechee Road. This is Cottonville, where the Cottonville ends. This is Derrick Inn Road at this location. This is a tax map which highlights the two parcels that are in question. It's approximately 120 acres of upland, and you can see in these maps, the zoning map shows the property as RA, and this aerial map that delineates the upland from the wetland areas at this location. As I mentioned, the tracts includes these two undeveloped parcels. The property historically was a part of, or is associated with, the Lebanon Plantation. Going back to the aerial map, to the vicinity map, You can see the balance of that property is in this area. The Lebanon Plantation was abandoned after the Civil War and was acquired by the Mills B. Lane family in 1916. The Lane Trust is the current owner of the subject property and the adjacent properties to the east as well. Those adjacent properties to the west, I should say, include structures that are recognized on the National Register of Historic Places. The subject properties, however, do not contain any structures. The reasons for the rezoning and the proposed development are outlined in the master plan that was submitted by the applicant. It includes a proposal of 290 single-family residences and amenities. These residences are all single-family detached properties. The proposed lots will be a mixture of 50-foot wide lots with at least 125 feet of depth, and that will be is proposed to be up to 2/3 of the total. The balance would be a minimum of 60 feet in width, also with this same lot depth. The project may include a community boat ramp or dock, which would require approval by the Department of Natural Resources, and all roads within the proposed subdivision will be public and meet the minimum 60-foot right-of-way requirements of Chatham County. I do want to just, these are the typical lot dimensions as shown by the applicant on their master plan, the 50-foot wide lot and the 60-foot wide lot. This is for the intent of offering variety of layouts within the master plan. Here you can see sort of highlighted in this lighter brown or the locations of the proposed 50-foot lots, and the darker brown would be the location of the proposed 60-foot lots. Should mention that under the current zoning, which is RA, the minimum lot width is 60 feet. So that was really part of the impetus of proposing a rezoning here, as opposed to simply developing it under the existing zoning. Reason being is that essentially if we rezone the property, they develop the property under the RA zoning, they'd be asking for variances on more than 2/3 of the lots likely to deal with lot width. So we felt like it was more appropriate to have them master plan the property, come through the zoning process, and then at the end of this, should it be adopted by the by Chatham County Commission, then the plan as shown here would represent the approved zoning document for this property. The proposed development is similar in nature to other recent residential subdivisions that have been developed along particularly Cottonvale Road and Derrick End Road in this area. A number of these properties started developing as subdivisions in the early 2000s, around 2005. Many of them are still in the process of building out. To this day, there are ones that are under construction. These subdivisions that you see in this area along Cottonvale. And one of the issues that came up, and frankly came up with previous subdivisions of this in this area, is the access issue. The access issue is an important issue in this neighborhood, as we've all probably experienced some of the traffic on Highway 17 at times. Cottonvale Road in this area is, and I'm going to show you this map here, it's a little easier to see, is the only access point from the neighborhoods and subdivisions that you see here back to Ogeechee Road at this time. There are also subdivisions that are created in the process of being built along Derrick End Road as well, and their only access is Derrick End Road to Highway 17. So there's a lack of cross connection between those two neighborhoods and those two primary corridors that serve these streets. So we have expressed concern about that in conjunction, especially with the other development that is happening or slated to happen within the vicinity, which does include multifamily development on the opposite side of Highway 17. The subject properties in this map are just down here. So as you can see, they would use Cottonvale Road as access. The positive thing is that Cottonvale at least is signalized. There is a signalized intersection at Ogeechee Road in Cottonvale. Derrick N Road is not currently signalized, and as I mentioned, there's no connection between the two. Under the current zoning, the RA zoning, because these properties have water and sewer, the difference in lots that could be built here is really negligible from the RA to the proposed PD. The reduction in lot width that's proposed to 50 feet, which frankly is becoming more common in residential subdivisions, does not really warrant the applicant a significant number of additional lots. In fact, based on our some quick math, the same number of, technically more lots could be built than are being proposed on this site. The applicant is proposing, I think I said 290, over 300 lots could be built on this property with or without a zoning change. So I should say that the property isn't totally maxed out from that standpoint, but there, you know, there's wetlands here, there's other issues that have to be worked around, which is probably the reason why it's not, you know, being totally built to the complete max. So I guess point being is that the proposed zoning change does not really have a significant impact on the developable nature of this property. It could be developed very similarly under the current zoning, absent the lot widths that the applicant is proposing. Obviously, the number of vehicle trips will be increased by the proposed development. And I do want to make this point as well. And, you know, we experience this all the time with major subdivisions, is that if this gets approved by the county commission, the developer then goes through a traffic impact analysis and a major subdivision and a specific development plan, all the things you have to do to get to the point where you can actually start coming out of the ground. 290 units won't be built at one time. I think that's important to stress, is that typically these types of subdivisions get built 20 or 30 units at a time over a period of time. I think that's a benefit in this case because of the impacts that we've recognized, particularly on Ogeechee Road. With that said, the proposed development pattern is similar, we find, to adjacent properties. We do believe there's an important need for a future connection of some kind to Highway 17. The PUD will, to a benefit, I believe, grant some assurances as to what will be built here in terms of number of dwelling units. And based on those findings, staff is recommending approval of the proposed rezoning. We believe that the attached master plan would serve as the approved zoning document should this get approved, and then that would be followed by a major subdivision and a specific development plan, which would be required to be approved by the Planning Commission. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lassa. Mr. Noah.
A couple questions. One, the surrounding neighborhoods, what are the lot widths on those?
Generally, 60 feet.
Right.
60 okay. feet.
And what are the side yard setbacks for those lots?
5 feet side yard setbacks.
And will you go to the proposed 50 foot where
the setbacks will be the same?
Okay. And has this gone before Chatham Emergency Services to, do they have any input?
There was a
cul-de-sacs and the width between homes and stuff.
I do understand that there was a meeting held with okay. the applicant's engineer and Chatham Emergency okay. Services.
I'm good.
Sure.
Can you go to the maps, page 4? I hadn't noticed this until you brought it up. One more. There you go.
Okay.
The little highlighted road up in the corner there, that goes to Derrick, doesn't it?
Are you talking here?
That little black line that looks like it was at one point the consideration of a development. There you go.
Oh, in here.
Three cul-de-sacs on it.
Okay. Yeah, there was a, I believe it was a townhome development that was proposed at this location at one time. I'd have to verify that, but I believe that was the case here.
So it looks to me like stubbing out to that property line would be an excellent way to get an alternative exit in the future.
Stubbing out to this property line?
Yes.
Let's go back to this.
Cul-de-sac.
Whoops. So that would be
that little funky cul-de-sac right there.
Right here.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it would be difficult. I mean, we might have to stub to the other side, but if we put a stub in, then we could ask the next developer to tie to it, couldn't we?
I think that's true, yes. Let me go back to their other map. I see where you're saying. Yeah, that would just be have to be agreed upon between the two property owners or any future property owner.
Just for information, can we scoot down on Cottonvale, where existing development already is, further back there? I don't know how far back we can get.
You mean, let's see. Oops.
Yes.
You mean back here?
Yeah. You see those two stubs? And then the next development came in and they brought in a road and they have what, five cul-de-sacs that didn't tie to those two stubs?
Mm-hmm.
So if someone on that end cul-de-sac had a heart attack, they would have to wait for the fire truck to come all the way down and turn onto that road and then turn onto
the
next road. Yes. So that's the connectivity that concerns me. The fact that we have five cul-de-sacs when there were two stubs that were left that would have provided those people other ways out of that development outside of the one that's further to the west. And then there is for them, fortunately, they connect even further to the west. These people in this development only have that one way in and one way out. So if something happens on Cottonvale, they're in trouble.
It is an issue, certainly, and I agree with everything you just said. I think the reason behind this, what creates this, is when these individual projects come in over a period of time. So you have one developer come in and they've got 35 acres that they're going to take down and build some houses.
But doesn't it behoove us and the developer to do everything in our power to connect to other parcels so that people have other ways in and out of their development?
Yes, I agree with that 100%. But I also think that the issue comes in with those property owners and their willingness to connect or not to connect.
One other question, the boat ramp. Will it be a public boat ramp? If they build the boat ramp, will it be a public boat ramp? But the roads will be public. So the taxpayers will be paying for the roads that the individual residents use, but the boat ramp won't be accessible to the taxpayers.
I'll let Mr. Giordano speak to that when he comes up.
Thank you.
Mr. Coles.
Mr. Chair, the only comment that I would say is I believe that development at the end of Derrick Inn Road was supposed to be a private gated community, so they may not be as inclined to do connectivity, but that also fell through, so that could be different in the future.
Yes.
Any more questions for staff? All right. Hearing none, we will now hear from the petitioner. And Mr. Giordano, you have, what, 20 minutes, yeah, if needed?
Sure. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you, Marcus. John Giordano, Thomason Hutton, representing the applicant. We've also got representatives from the development team and the property owner here as well, so hopefully we can answer any questions you might have. I do want to go ahead and just kind of hit, obviously, I know there's some issues that have been discussed here today and kind of go on and talk about those. Marcus, thank you for the introduction to the project. Did a good job, and I appreciate that. One of the things that Marcus mentioned, and I do want to go and touch on this again, was about the density, because I know during the pre-meeting, there were some questions about the number of lots. There is another plan that was developed that shows 60-foot lots used throughout. It actually generated more residential lots on this property. So our application here today, where we are requesting the rezoning to go down to the 50 feet, is not to get additional density. It's just to create a better plan and better diversify the product type that can be offered here. So this application is not about getting additional density on the property. It's simply just product diversity and a better land plan. I know that there was some question about the traffic. Yes, Cottonvale, that is the only road in and out. And we acknowledge that we will have to do a traffic study. And that is part of the development approval process. We will do that when we go through the specific development plan review. Obviously, Cottonvale ties into Ogeechee Road, which is a state highway. And we will meet with Chatham County Engineering. We will touch base with Georgia Department of Transportation for a traffic scoping meeting to identify what those concerns are and make sure that as we're going through the traffic study process, we are, addressing everybody's concerns at that point. Connectivity, and I know that's one of the issues that we're talking about right now. And I'm going to zoom in here on the. There was some discussion about connectivity further to the south. As you can see, we have a road stubbed out here. I don't believe at this point there is any planned improvements for Lebanon proper to the south, but should there be, that connectivity is there for that future development. Should it ever come on board, then it can tie to our proposed development. As far as to the north, and I know, let me hop back over. And there was some discussion about the property. Here, yes, it was slated to be a private development. We are looking at extending a cul-de-sac up that way. And should that piece ever redevelop and future connectivity required, that is certainly a possibility at that point. But at this time, it is a private development owned by another private group. They were not, willing to entertain any offers at this point. So, that connectivity cannot occur at this point. However, we'll work with staff on future connectivity at that location as we're going through that specific development plan and that subdivision plat process. And that will get you back to Derrick and Road. But again, there's at this point, there's nothing specifically that we can do as that is a separate piece of property owned by another private group. No boat ramp. At this point, there was not planned a boat ramp. I think our master plan actually just calls it as a future potential dock, should that ever occur. Obviously, there's a lot of permits that are required by that. Obviously, through DNR, Coastal Resources Division. At this point, that was just put in there as a potential placeholder. I don't think there's any plan for that at this time. But should that we choose to move forward at that point, again, that will be part of the specific development plan. We'll have to go through all the permitting processes for that. So, and I did also want to hit on one other thing, because I know during the pre-meeting, there was some discussion about floodplain. I quick pulled this up and looked, and the floodplain is actually shown on the map. And as you'll see, there's a small corner of a lot rear yard that touches on it right there. But what I will say is as we are going through the specific development plan approval, that is something that Chatham County Engineering is very in tune on. They will look at any fill that's placed in the flood zone. We've got lots of stormwater ponds that are being proposed around the development to provide any floodplain mitigation should it be required. But again, none of the building pads are proposed to be within a flood zone. So even at that point, I wouldn't even expect any fill within the floodplain. But should we get to that point, floodplain mitigation will be provided. There was one question about the meeting with Chatham EMS. We did sit down with Chatham County Engineering at one of their weekly SPR meetings and presented the plan. And Chatham EMS is part of that process. And we met with Thomas Wolf and discussed, he had a few concerns. We went ahead and addressed those concerns. I say a few, he had one concern. And that was the secondary access point coming into the development. So we went ahead and addressed that concern, and it met his requirements. And so we've continued on with our application. So we have met with him. We are continuing to work with him, as well as Chatham County Engineering, on the approval process. So,
sure.
What is the secondary access point?
The secondary access point is both coming off Cottonvale Road. That is the public right of way that accesses the property, and that's how the secondary access coming into the development is achieved.
So the little curved road is your secondary access point?
That is the secondary access point, yes, ma'am. Cottonvale is the only public right of way that accesses this property.
Okay.
And so, and whether or not we were here with the rezoning, or if it was just straight development under the current existing zoning of RA, it would still have the singular public access on Cottonvale, but then we have the two entrances coming into the development, which meets the fire code.
Two entrances coming into the development, because we've got a right-hand turn there off of Cottonvale.
We've got the entrance coming in off Cottonvale here, and another entrance coming off Cottonvale further down.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, so you don't feel any obligation to stub to an adjacent property. The stub down on the south is not all the way to the property line.
And we could extend the right of way. Okay. I mean, at this point, it would make no sense to extend the asphalt pavement down there. I mean, that's just going to create a turnaround issue for people pulling down there, or you're going to have people parking down there because it's a dead end. You know, again, that would be something that could be addressed during the subdivision platting. Extend the right of way for any future connectivity should it occur. So not an issue with that.
Okay, let's back out and take a look at the flood zone in this cul-de-sac on the south side, right there.
So this line down here is flood zone AE. This area in here is zone X, and the area in between is shaded X, which is also does not require floodplain mitigation. Okay. But I will also say this. We're proposing ponds throughout this development. Because we are discharging to a tidal water body, the coastal marsh, we're not technically required to meet pre versus post requirements because we have the direct discharge. So we are providing an abundance of additional stormwater features here, and we will be creating additional floodplain storage. So, you know, as far as any impacts to the flood zone, I'm not, you know, any impacts would be mitigated.
I have a question for Mr. Lotson. This is just the rezoning. The subdivision will come back to us?
Yes, that's correct. This is a zoning petition, which will, if approved by the county commission, the applicants will then need to work on both their traffic study and their major subdivision. Because it's a major subdivision, it would come back here. And just for the record, I wanted to say that stub out that Ms. Jarrett referred to, as a matter of a subdivision review, that would have been one of our comments, that they bring that right of way to the property line.
Any further comments for the petitioner? I want to add this. Very familiar with the area. I do have also a concern about access of Cottonvale. I know it's only 200, well, I won't say only, it's 290 units, but that is still a significant amount of trips. And the biggest concern I have there with the road is there is not even a shoulder to pull off onto on Cottonvale. So in the event that there is an emergency and it's during a rush hour, how do the drivers make way for emergency vehicles pass through? So I know the onus cannot be solely on you all. However, I would like to encourage highly the conversation with the county, the conversation with DOT, and whomever is responsible for addressing these roadways to kind of help figure it out, because as of right now, this could be, this is just a mounting issue for the residents of that community.
Understood. And as we're going through that specific development plan process and working on our traffic impact study, you know, we will look at the capacity of Cottonvale. We'll look at the existing road sections, and, you know, we'll work through that process during that application and that review period. At this point, we are just here for the rezoning. You know, once we get through this process, then we will move full steam into, you know, finalizing the traffic study, getting out there, meeting with DOT, county engineering, developing our construction plans, you know, working with county engineering on the stormwater, making sure that, you know, we meet all the applicable ordinances. So that process will come. At this point, we're just here requesting the rezoning of the property.
Okay. And I might also add, I know, again, this is a little early, but I do want to, the earlier the better for these things to be considered, is the construction traffic itself and the impact on the community. So I just want to make sure these types of things are on the radar and is recorded for the record for these things to be considered by the petitioner, by the developer, by the entire team, so that we can do what we're charged to as this body to make sure we're doing right by the community.
And the road as well, that can have some big impacts.
Correct.
From construction traffic. Can you please consider the connection on the north side as well?
Again, I think we're happy to work with staff on how to facilitate a potential future, whether that's just extending a right of way or, you know, I don't think it behooves anybody to build a dead end road that just with a stub that goes nowhere. I mean, I've seen plenty of times where those get built and that just becomes a place where somebody parks a car or something like that. And we don't want that. So, you know, I think we are more than happy to work with staff as we're going through that subdivision process and that specific development plan process to figure out how we can best address that potential future connectivity.
Anything else for the petitioner? Okay, so now we'll enter into public comment. And once we finish recording public comment, we'll have the opportunity, the petitioner will have the opportunity to come back and rebut anything that's raised by the public. So first we have Terry Smith. We ask that when you come up, you state your name for the record and keep your comment to 3 minutes or less.
My name's Terry Smith. And as I've listened to all this, talking about the song Alan Jackson wrote, The Little Man, I don't know if you've ever heard of it or not. You need to listen to it. I live at the corner. Let's see if I can work this thing right there. Cottonville Road, all the way in the corner. Okay. My sister-in-law lives here. My sister lives here. All this property is ours. Okay. My neighbor, Lord Carter, lives down here. I never dreamed none of this would happen. We've lived there since we were babies. Daddy brought this property. I have several concerns, whether they need to be mentioned in here now or not. I don't know. You tell me. Number one, the entrance to this place, this road that runs down here, Cottonville Road, runs right by our property, the old Cottonville Road that goes to that yellow gate. Nobody has talked to us or even concerned us about none of what's going on here. That entrance concerns me. All of that's happening right in front of our property. A driveway as far as accessing our property, accessing my land, because my land is separate from my sister's land. And for a long time, I have been driving down the side of the original Cottonville Road to go to the Yellow Gate across my sister-in-law's property. How Chatham County let my daddy sell me that piece of land way back then for a little bit of money, and access was never something done there, I don't know. That needs to be looked at with all this going on. And one of my major concerns is By the way, if y'all are the ones developing this, y'all would come offer me a nice chunk of change. I'd really like to leave because I never dreamed nothing like this would ever happen around us. When we would moved in there, there was four houses on that road and there was farms. It was a one lane dirt road. Okay. There's going to be some kind of traffic in here. How far away from our property is the next door neighbor's house going to be? Will there be a privacy fence or anything put up there? And this has been a farm.
One second. Can you continue to direct your comments here so we can capture you in the
microphone? I'm sorry. Yes. No problem. And I probably don't even need to be on this camera because I'm probably getting nothing done, but that's the way I feel. Anyhow, this has been a farm here all my life. I have hogs, cows, goats, chickens. What's going to happen in my future? Did I put this on the record or not? I don't know, but every one of y'all eats a pork chop and a piece of chicken. I process my own animals. I've done it all my life. My daddy taught me to. What happens when I've got all these people wrapped around me? Will I be grandfathered in because I've been there all my life doing the thing that we've all, way back in the day, people had to do? You know what I mean? Another thing is drainage. When my daddy sold half of this property to Connor Ridley back then, I think it's the Lakes of Cottonville. Connor, there was two or three drainage systems, ditches original, that went all the way to the marsh through Derrick's Inn and through Lebanon. All that was blocked off. So all the rainwater that goes on our property now really has nowhere to go. So when all this is developed, where's that water going to? Oh, will this make our taxes? What's going to happen to our taxes when all this happens? I think, and I asked my wife, and I should have asked her before now. At one time, we was in agricultural. I'm not sure if we're still there or not. I have a lot of questions, and I weren't prepared for this. I'm not the elegant speaker that everybody else was that's been up here, but I am a concerned citizen that's lived here all my life, and I would like some questions answered, whether it's now or later.
Thank you. I'm sure that some of the questions that you asked will be able to be answered by the petitioner. Other questions, you may have the opportunity to check in here at MPC and ask staff and things of that nature. We'll try to help you out the best we can to get the answers that we can give you.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, you have a question?
I have a question for you, sir.
Mrs. Smith.
With regards to taxes, if you haven't already, I'd recommend looking into the homestead exemption to freeze your property taxes so that it wouldn't be impacted by this.
Okay.
Mr. Kegler.
Sir, have you had an opportunity to meet with the county engineering staff to kind of ask some of those questions, knowing that that area is changing and with the sale of some other properties out there, have you had an opportunity to do that?
I have talked with no one because I guess I have, my daddy would get on me. He's not here. He'd probably say procrastinated and not got on the ball and done that. Mm-hmm. As I've seen them surveying and doing what all has been going on. And I didn't know that this very large situation right here was fixing to happen. I didn't realize what was really going on right here. I know that it was being surveyed and something was happening. I've dropped the ball myself, I guess.
Yes, sir. I would strongly suggest that in the near future, you schedule time to talk with the county engineering staff to kind of get an idea of what's going on there, and then you can make some decisions. They can answer, along with the MPC staff, they can ask questions for you. And I pose those questions to them.
All right, sir.
Thank you. And again, we encourage that the developers seek out residents within a close proximity.
We are the residents that this is impacting right here.
Okay.
Mainly. We're here on one side and the other side, point blank.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Wildwood.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith. And don't forget microphone.
My intent is not to be a devil's advocate. I just want to make sure you're aware that should these developers not get the zoning ordinance that they want,
a developer can come in there and put up to 300 homes without any changes in the zoning. Are you aware of that?
I'm not aware. No, sir. I'm pretty, if I must say this, ignorant to everything that's going on here. Yeah. That's why I came to this meeting today.
Right.
I'm not trying to interfere with nothing that's happening. What I'm trying to do is whatever I can do to help me and mine as this project develops, I need to seek the right help. I need to.
Yeah. Budget your efforts. I just want to make sure you know that these developers want to put in a development, and that's what you're speaking on about this particular development.
Right.
However, there are developers that could come in there and not have this public hearing and do the zone, do the development that they want to do under the current zoning that they have there.
Right.
So I just want to make sure that you're aware of that. That's all.
Well, maybe somebody might need to guide me in the right direction that I need to go to. Because I needed to be working today, but I was concerned of what was going on.
And that is what these forums are for. And we appreciate you showing up
right.
as a concerned citizen.
Right. I'm not trying to stop or hinder nothing.
No, that's not even the understanding. Like you
right.
are working very well. And you're very clear on your intentions. I think at right now, possibly if staff wouldn't mind helping you out in regards to maybe we can potentially have the staff schedule a meeting and or get with the developer, the petitioner, to schedule a meeting for the community, as well as for you to potentially get the information you need to get in touch with county engineering so that we can, as all of these individual entities work together to make this thing a successful development for the community, can still address the concerns of the community that's already there.
Right.
All right, sir. If I may, I would suggest that you give your contact information to Mr. Lotson. And if you've got other people that live around you that are equally concerned, we can meet with all of you at one time to explain the process, what's going on. If you've got questions, you can ask us, and then you can meet with the developer to ask them what questions and things that you need. So we will work that out with you and anybody else in the community that you feel needs to have a better understanding about what's right. being proposed. And he's right behind you. We'll take your information.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Joni Smith. I'm guessing Ms. Joni Smith. You were four go. Okay, perfect. Thank you. Glenda Kaysen. No. Okay. Evelyn Smith. Okay. And Mr. William Carter. And we ask that you state your name for the record.
William L. Carter. I own property at 319 Cottonville Road. And actually, Mr. Smith said pretty much what I wanted to say, but I do have a major safety concern. This subdivision is going to border two sides of my property all the way. And I dug a 6.5 acre pond, 20 foot deep on my property. And without some kind of buffer or fence or berm or something, you know, children, summertime, pond, if they could walk right out of their backyard into a pond, it would be a safety concern.
Okay. No, I appreciate that. Again, I think that's one of those issues where we think it's going to be advantageous for you all to be able to have the opportunity to speak directly to the developers to present these types of concerns so that we can get out ahead of it before the first piece of dirt is moved.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else? All right. We appreciate it. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Sure. So I think a lot of these concerns that were brought up will be addressed probably through meetings with MPC and maybe county engineering. I did just want to talk about the drainage and the concern on Cottonville Road. Obviously, any improvements that we make to Cottonville, we will look at the drainage, the existing drainage patterns, and make sure that we are certainly not leaving a worse situation. And hopefully, if there was historical drainage patterns that at some point were blocked up, you know, I you know, we would look to certainly improve those, because we certainly don't want to have a road that floods, and that is one of the county engineering ordinances. So any improvements that, you know, we do through an extension to Cottonvale, you know, we'll be looking to meet the county engineering ordinances for the roadways, as well as, you know, improving the drainage right there if there does seem to be any issues.
Yeah.
Mr. Cagle.
Yes. And would it be, would y'all be amenable to meeting with the citizens out there, knowing that that area is changing dramatically? Would you be amenable to meet with those concerned property owners to kind of give them an update of, you know, kind of what's coming, so they'll be able to, you know, make decisions that's going to be beneficial to them?
Certainly. I think, you know, we'll work with Marcus, mm-hmm, and see about getting, you know, a meeting set, and we can come and we'll have MPC staff here. You know, we can work with Ms. Cooler and Mr. Milionis and see if maybe we get county engineering, MPC staff, and we can just address it all at once.
We appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Giordano. All right. So we'll go ahead into the board discussions if needed. But I want to reiterate what we're here for today is the rezoning of this property from an RA to a PUD. And that's strictly what we're voting on today. And I also want to restate for the public that this zoning as it existed could deliver more density and more units by right. And this petitioner is currently asking for a different zoning type so that they can have some variation in the width of the width of the lot, and they are currently proposing less density than what they would be able to by right under its current zoning. So I just want to make sure that the public is very clear on what it is that we are voting on today. Okay. If there is no discussion or anything like that, I'll entertain a motion.
Coles make the motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Do I have a second?
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. So we got a motion on the floor made by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Cagler to approve staff recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? All right, hearing none, we'll go into a vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Cagler?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
And Mr. Stevens, yes. And the motion passes and the project is approved. All right, thank you. All right.
Mr. Chairman, if I just might say for the sake of the public, because I know there's some people who are interested in this, just in terms of the process, this item will now be forwarded to the County Commission for their consideration. And once it's docketed on their agenda, they will hear it in a public hearing, just like we had today. So members of the public will get another opportunity to comment on this before it's voted on by the chairman and the commission.
Thank you for that. All right, so that concludes the regular business for today. We'll go into presentations and there are none listed. We'll go into other business and there is none listed there either. And so now we will have the item for executive session. So we'll entertain a motion to go into the executive session.
Motion to go into executive session.
Second.
Coles make the motion to return from executive session.
Okay. So
why would he second?
Well, so we are now returned from the executive session. And with that, that is the last item on the agenda. So we'll now move to adjourn.
We got to make a vote.
We got to vote on that. Okay. Yeah. Excuse me. So voice vote on return from executive session.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Good. So now we can go into the adjournment.
Move to adjourn. Motion to adjourn. All right. Coles.
All right. Adjourn.
Aye.
Thank you all. Have a good one.